You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to the Break a Bat podcast, where baseball meets Broadway. An attempt to show that my two favorite mediums don't have to live in such separate worlds and maybe even break some stigmas. We're happy to have you with us. Now let's play ball. Hi everyone, welcome to Break a Bat. I'm your host, Al Malafronte, coming at you from Broadway with my guest host, Connor Lester.
Thanks for having me today, Al.
Well, we're happy to have you. Today's guest had a seven-year major league career in which five of those seasons were spent on the stages of Broadway. A member of five different Yankee playoff casts, he led Yankee pitchers in performances, otherwise known as games pitched, with 83 in 2006, a number that's still good for second all-time in their single-season record books. He's nice enough to call in today. Please welcome to the stage, Scott Proctor. How's it going,
Scott? Thank you all for having me. Yeah. Good, man. Thank you all for having me today.
It's a pleasure. You know, Scott, the Yanks are division champs again. Playoffs are upon us. Do you miss it?
Yeah, there's parts of it I do. Of course, the competition and the camaraderie, the clubhouse is probably the biggest thing that you don't find in the normal world. But, you know, it was fun while it lasted.
Scott, every Yankee team you played on won 94-plus games. Let me ask, what was the best Yankee team you played on that didn't win at all?
And I don't know. That's really tough because I was blessed in the time period that I was there. It was like playing on an all-star team every year. I know the year that we lost to Detroit was really tough, just because we felt like we were really moving in the right direction, and it just seemed like the momentum shifted due to a couple issues with weather that prolonged the series and kind of threw things off. But that's, you know, that's just the way it goes. But I can't pick one team out that I can say was better than the rest, because we were incredibly talented.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when game two got rained out, and it seemed like the crazy thing was it was supposed to be an 8 o'clock start, and next thing you know, it's like 9:30, it's not even raining anymore, and they still called the game. You're very right about that momentum shift. And that was your career year as well. So that was, that was definitely, for us Yankee fans, that was a tough pill to swallow.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Scott, you came up through the Dodgers system. When did you make the transition to reliever? And did you like that more than starting? When did you think you'd ever become a reliever, or were you always set on being a starter?
I mean, I think you talk to every little leaguer, everybody coming up in the game, and they want to be an everyday person. Everybody sees all the starting pitchers and the accolades they get, and so it's kind of tough. I mean, the closest to being an everyday pitcher is being a reliever. So you have the opportunity to impact the game on any given day. But I tell you, it was actually the year that I got traded to New York. Had a successful year in the minor leagues with the Dodgers. Got to the end of spring training, and the organization had told me, "Hey, we're gonna send you back to Double A. Oh, and by the way, we're gonna make you a reliever." I can honestly say I wasn't happy about it. One, to be taken back to a level lower than where I ended the year before, but also two, to be transitioned from, you're known as a prospect. You're all prospects are really starters in the minor leagues, or at least they used to, because they wanted you to get the innings and the reps, you know, to justify whether you were ready or not. And but I tell you, it really helped me to refocus on pitch to pitch versus trying to eat up innings and get deep in the game. So it really was a blessing in disguise to be able to just focus on, you know, one pitch at a time, one hitter at a time, move into the next one and kind of laying it all on the line for however long they let you stay in the game. You didn't have to pace yourself.
Interesting.
And so I think that's kind of, yeah.
It's a totally different mindset then.
Oh, it is. It is. You know, I don't think that, you know, in the minor leagues, they're more protective in how they use you and allow you time to get up. So I didn't really get up and get loose. Sorry, I still get caught in my old baseball terms that most people probably don't understand. But I didn't really learn how to get loose and how to get, you know, ready quick until Paul Quantrill helped me, you know, in a couple of years in the major leagues. He was integral in that.
So you had a lot of, there was great veteran presence on that team. Did you have a lot of mentors out in the bullpen? I mean, you certainly had Mariano there. You got there when Tom Gordon was there, Tanyan Sturts. Were those guys, would you say they were instrumental in helping you with that?
I tell you, I can't thank them enough. The stories that I continually use with kids that I coach now, of just, you know, little tiny details that they told me. I mean, the list goes on from Stanton to Alan Embry, Quantrill, Farnsworth, Mariano. I mean, even Al Leiter, when he came down a couple times in the pen and pitched out of there, just, you know, it was incredible. It was like going to, a very well-stocked library every day, and you learn real quick to shut your mouth, open your ears, listen. I mean, even Gabe White, I mean, there's some guys in there that probably don't ring a bell with a lot of people, but, you know, all those veterans that have been there for years, were awesome.
And not to mention you had Mel and Gator as your pitching coaches. That's, they certainly had pretty good track records, for the Yankees as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you, I mean, you know, really, when you look at it as a player, people don't understand the impact that certain people make. And it might not even be a fellow teammate. You know, I mean, as integral and as much help as Mel and Gator were, you know, I mean, even the video guys, you know, I mean, just the hitting coaches. I mean, I remember sitting in the batting cage with my headphones on, just listening to Mattingly when he was there as a hitting coach, talk to the hitters, and you're just sitting there evaluating, okay, if that's what the hitter's thinking, now what do I got to do as a pitcher to combat that? So, you know, people that might not even realize they had an impact in getting you to where you were. I mean, that clubhouse was full of them. The Yankees do a tremendous job at putting the best of the best around the guys and then demanding excellence and say, hey, we're going to give you the best, but then we demand the best. We demand that you win. And I think that's what's great about the city. Now, growing up a New Yorker, I honestly didn't like New York. I hated any New York team. And I wasn't a big fan of New Yorkers coming from South Florida, but I tell you, when you get up there and you immerse yourself and you really start to understand the people, and get to know the people, I mean, I can tell you this, I got a totally different view of the Yankees, of New Yorkers, of the city, of everything. And it's, you know, it's a huge transition, a huge shift.
So Scott, you, you know, you had all these guys dispensing wisdom, and you did have quite the cast of characters. Who was sort of the biggest character, clubhouse clown, if you will, of all the guys that you played with while you were in New York?
I mean, you know, it was, everybody was unique. Everybody's personality was unique. And I think that's a testament to Torrey and the coaching staff and Steinbrenner and Cashman to make all those different personalities mesh, and to work for a common goal. I mean, I think it went back to, you know, the core group of guys with Bernie and Sato and Jeet and you know, Andy when he came back and Mariano. I mean, you know, it didn't matter how much time you saw guys coming in, even like when Clemens came back, you know, the respect for the pinstripes, the respect for the people that came before you, the respect for the organization and what it meant and the staff. I mean, it was incredible. But Johnny Damon, I mean, he was definitely a character. I mean, the list was endless, but the guys that stood out, Giambi was always fun loving, easy going. You know, Sturzy was always a riot. You know, it was incredible. It was really fun to be around.
Scott, what was your "I made it" moment in the major leagues? Was it a big strikeout? Was it pitching to a particular hitter, playing in a certain stadium? What had you feeling like you know, I'm here now, I've arrived?
You know, the one thing that's true is that you're always told countless times of, you know, once you feel like you've made it, you know, you can't ever get to the point where you feel like you made it, because then you won't work. You know, and that was kind of impressed on you from spring training when you're running PFPs or pitcher fielding practices from day one. And, you know, you're in a group with Mariano and he's like, "Hey man, game seven," you know, it's like everything is treated as though it's game seven of the World Series from the first day of spring training until the end. And, but I would tell you that kind of the first moment where I felt like, okay, I can do this, is going into Fenway and bases loaded facing Nomar.
That was the A-Rod Varitek game, right?
I don't think that was in. It might have been the same year. They kind of all run together now. But, you know, we ended up having the lead and then gave it up at the end. You know, they came back and beat us. You know, it was kind of those ones that I went in, pitched a couple real good innings, came in a big situation, bases loaded, two outs, punch out Nomar, you know, held the lead for a couple innings, and then, the bullpen couldn't hold it behind me. You know, that was kind of those ones, because you always hear about Nomar Garciaparra, all these big name guys, and, you know, it's Red Sox, Yankees, and you come in a big situation, and it's always a playoff chase. You know, that was really cool.
What was George like during Yankees Red Sox?
George Steinbrenner?
George Steinbrenner.
I can tell you that was a man I avoided at all costs. I never really had a one-on-one with him. I know that, you know, when it was known that he was coming down in the clubhouse, you made sure you looked like you were doing something, even if you weren't at the time. But I never really can say that I had a personal interaction with him. But I tell you, the consensus from the guys that I was around was, you know, ultimate respect, because, you know, George would give you whatever you wanted. You know, if you said you needed new weight equipment, if you said you needed this in the clubhouse or whatever, I mean, you know, they would make sure it was done. But again, you know, the expectation of, now you got to do it on the field, put the team first and winning above all anything else. You know, that was the one thing that I knew about him.
Now, Scott, you got to pitch in New York for 5 seasons. Since we're also a Broadway podcast, I'm sure you caught your fair share of Broadway shows. Any good stories from the Great White Way?
Well, I can tell you, I honestly never had the opportunity to go. I did, however, send my wife to several. And, you know, I tell you, everything in New York is magnified. Everything you experience, it's really an incredible place. Once you figure out and are able to deal with the heartbeat of the city, and kind of get in sync with it. And I tell you, everything that I heard from people that went to Broadway shows and, you know, stories from my wife are, you know, it's magnificent is about the word to explain it, the best word.
Have you been back much since you retired?
A couple times. When I first got out of baseball, I ended up joining Morgan Stanley. And, of course, their headquarters are in New York. So I had to go up there several times for training, and still am friends with a couple reporters. So I'd go see Mark Feinstein in the city. We'd always hook up when I'd get back in town. I have not been to a game in the city. Oh, no, I take that back. I did actually go to one. I actually went to a Mets game because Burley was pitching for Toronto, and I went to watch him. But I haven't been back to Yankee Stadium since.
What are you up to these days? Are you still involved in baseball at all? Still in finance? What's going on?
Yeah, I got out, got into finance because I got tired of my fellow colleagues getting bad advice and and kind of misguided in what they should do. Had a dad that I was complaining to him one day, and he said, you're not an idiot. Are you going to shut up and do something about it? And, kind of challenged me. So, but yes, I'm involved in baseball. I've, went back to help out my alma mater in high school. We took over that team about, this is our fourth season. And then I have a stake in a couple other little league teams, and I'm always involved being around the field because, you know, the one thing you're taught as a professional athlete is to give back. I mean, as you just talked about all the veteran guys imparting knowledge, you know, on me as a younger player, you know, that's what we're kind of ingrained in us, to give back in a lot of different ways. So yeah, to be able to impact these kids. I mean, we had our team up at 4:50 this morning. They have, they're in a training cycle right now, with a full-time trainer, and we run them through some drills for about an hour and a half, and then they go to study hall. And it's neat to see the transition from these kids, not just on the field, but personally and, you know, just in their whole life. Look at things differently because they're just little tidbits of information you give them. Yeah. A lot of fun.
That's fantastic.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Now, Scott, we thought we'd wrap our time with you for a little segment that we do on the show here. It's called Fastball Derby. We ask you a question. You say the first thing that comes to your head.
Oh, that's not very good. Is this thing edited? Go ahead.
Let's see. All right. So we got favorite New York meal.
Del Frisco's. Anything at the restaurant.
Coolest or most meaningful piece of memorabilia that you kept from your playing career?
Picture my dad and I in Yankee Stadium.
Awesome.
A pitch that someone else threw that you were jealous of.
Oh, come on. That's easy. Mariano's cutter.
Knew you were going to say that.
Love that.
Come on. That's an easy one.
What about another one?
Paul Quantrill's sinker.
Nice.
Okay.
Good answer. Most uncomfortable Jeter and A-Rod moment.
Can't really say that I had one. I mean, those guys were professional. I mean, you know, there was a lot of rumors flowing around about whether they liked each other or not. But I tell you that, you know, everything about Jeter is a consummate professional. And, you know, A-Rod, I mean, A-Rod's A-Rod, you know,
good way to put it.
He's an incredible competitor.
Did you think he'd be this successful in the broadcast booth after retiring?
You know, I tell you, one thing about A-Rod is you can tell he's going to be successful at anything he does because he's very passionate and he's very dedicated. I mean, he was very dedicated in his craft at the game. I mean, you saw that when he transitioned from short to third. That's not an easy transition, especially in the atmosphere that he did it in and for the organization he did it for. So it doesn't surprise me. I mean, he's an incredibly talented individual.
If you had to bring one teammate to a fight, who's got your back?
Oh, man. One teammate. I would have to say Tanyan Sturts.
He's got that height advantage, too. I would take Sturts.
Yeah, I'd say. I'm going to go with their feet. He can go with their head.
What's your Yankees Mount Rushmore? Your top four Yankees?
Oh, top four Yankees. I was always a big fan of the Mick, even though I never got a chance to meet him. You got to love Goose just because of being around him all the time. But, you know, I tell you, I mean, the guys I played with, you know, Mariano and Jeet, they're definitely in there. I mean, the competitor Andy Pettit was the little time I got to play with him. And then, you know, just Posada. I mean, it's hard. That is such a hard question because there's just so much respect for all those guys. I can't really put them in an order, you know.
What's on your bucket list?
What's on my bucket list? Well, I mean, I'm going to, you know, skydive. I want to dive with the Great Whites. I want to see my daughters get married and see all my kids grow up to be successful. And then, you know, die married to my wife.
You can't beat that. That's a good one.
If you could be on any game show or reality show, which one would it be?
None of them. None. I can honestly, I have no desire.
You know what? I respect that. Once I got out of the
public life, I mean, I partake in it now from a foundation my wife and I have.
What's the foundation, Scott?
So my oldest daughter had open heart surgery actually in 2006 when I was with the Yankees. So we started a foundation, to benefit the hospital that she had the surgery at, Jackson down in Miami. And since then, it's kind of morphed into helping the Treasure Coast where I live, kids there in three areas: health, education, and athletics. So we started a little league program and try to keep kids off the streets and get them focused through sports. We do a lot of things in the local schools here, and then we help with families that are in same situation that we were with our daughter, of getting them connected to doctors, you know, facilitating certain things for them while they're going through some times, or, you know, funding them. So, by then we've taken on some other stuff. I mean, as everyone knows, in the Bahamas, we're doing some stuff for kids over there. So it's a ever changing landscape there, but it's mainly focused at kids in our area down here in South Florida.
Scott, so if people want to get involved or donate and, you know, learn more about what you're about, do you have a website or any place that they could find you online or social media?
Yep, it's Emmy. I'm not on social media, so if you found me, that ain't me, or is not me, I should say. But yes, we have Emmy's team. It's MESteamFoundation.com online. The website is there. That's the best way. I do have my I think I have a LinkedIn for work that I'm required to have, which I don't really pay attention to. But that's really the best way. I mean, I still get fan mail from people and I'm very much appreciative of it. And it's kind of neat that my boys are now getting older and they'll pull out business cards. See, I'm in a different frame of mind now, baseball cards. And they'll be like, "Dad, that was you." I'm like, "Yeah, that was me. You know, yes, I did used to have a career." So,
and there's some red bold type on the back of that card for that league leading 83 uh-huh. appearances back in 06. So, I'm glad that we had the chance to watch you pitch here. So, our last question will be to leave our listeners with this: best piece of advice anyone ever gave you?
Never give up, and I've always said, always believe in yourself. Don't believe what people say about you.
Well, it served you well, Scott, and we're so grateful that you got to join us today. So big thank you. And you know, next time you're in New York, if you need any recommendations on some good Broadway shows that you might want to catch, you know, let us know. We'll take good care of you.
Well, thank you guys very much. I appreciate the time, and I appreciate everybody in New York that was cheering us on and offering support in the good times and in the bad. And I really thank everybody there for teaching me about life and, you know, teaching me some great values.
And thanks for the memories on the field from both of us. We're both big Yankee fans, so really appreciate it.
Well, thank you guys.
All right. That's Scott Proctor, folks. We'll be back with you next week on another episode of Break a Bat. Thanks for listening to Break a Bat. This is produced by the fine folks at the Broadway Podcast Network. visit and subscribe at bpn.fm/breakabat. You can find me online at break_a_bat_podcast. And you can also find the Broadway Podcast Network on Instagram at Broadway Podcast Network. It's been so great having you here with us today, and we'll see you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.